Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tetragon Investor Call conference. All lines will be in listen-only mode throughout the whole conference. If anyone should require assistance during the conference, press star then zero on your telephone. Just to remind you, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to hand over to your chairperson, David Wyshnov. Please begin your meeting, and I will be standing by.
Thank you. As one of the principals of the investment manager of Tetragon Financial Group Limited, I'd like to welcome you to our investor call, which will focus on Q3 2010 results and provide an update on progress to date. The format of today's call will be similar to prior calls. Phil Bland, our CFO, will present Tetragon's Q3 results. I'll provide an overview on our portfolio and key performance metrics. And Jeff Herlin, also a principal, will go over questions we've received in the Q&A portion of the call. I'd like to remind everyone that the following contains forward-looking comments, including statements regarding intentions, beliefs, or current expectations concerning performance and the financial condition on products and markets in which Tetragon invests. Our performance may change materially as a result of various possible events or factors. Let me now turn the call over to Phil.
Thanks so much, David, and can I add my warm welcome to our Q3 2010 investor call. I'll start by providing some high-level comments on TFG's excellent results for the third quarter of 2010, which, as you will see, are contained in our recently published quarterly report. I'll also talk about some key performance drivers and later on address a couple of financial questions that have been raised by investors. As, of course, in the past, further detailed questions on the quarterly report can be emailed to us and will be answered directly wherever possible. The strong performance in the first half of the year continued and, I would say, accelerated into the third quarter as TFG recorded its fifth successive quarter of positive EPS at $1.03 per share, which is equivalent to consolidated net income of $125 million. Cash generation from the CLO portfolio grew quarter on quarter by around 18% to $71.8 million, and consolidated NAV per share grew to $8.43. In general, the underlying positives were a continuation on the theme from the previous quarter, namely that the CLOs benefited from strengthening OC cushions, supported by reduced underlying losses, increased carrying prices on defaulted and CCC assets, and also a reduction in CCC assets and CCC excesses. As a result, future projected cash flows increased, and our IRRs increased also from 13.1% to 13.7% on average across the portfolio. Interest income from investments of $45.8 million plus unrealized gains on investments of $121.3 million yielded a total investment income number of $167.1 million, which is Tetragon's highest to date. Although the primary drivers of this performance were the positive fundamentals that I mentioned a moment ago and will be discussed in more detail later, there was also an increase in income as a result of an adjustment to the discount rates applied to certain deals, which I'll describe in a moment. Let me turn now more generally to the Q3 valuation of Tetragon's CLO portfolio. As described in more detail on pages 9 to 10 of the quarterly report, the methodology for deriving the fair value of our CLO portfolio involves two main steps. Firstly, we project future cash flows, which are mainly driven by the current status of the deals, independently ascertained, to which certain assumptions are applied. This step generates our deal IRRs, which drive the rate at which we recognize interest income, and also generates the amortized cost for each deal. As a second step, we adjust the resulting future cash flows using an appropriate discount rate to reflect the perceived risk premium. Generally speaking, if the discount rate is higher than the IRR, the fair value of a deal will be written down to below its amortized cost. And the difference between the total amortized cost and the fair value on an aggregate basis across the portfolio is what we describe as the ALR fair value adjustment, which we've explained in some detail on prior calls and in prior quarterly reports. With regards to the first step, i.e. the modelling of future cash flows, Our assumptions for defaults, recoveries, prepayments, and reinvestment prices and spreads remained unchanged at the end of the quarter. You'll recall, I hope, that at the end of Q1, when certain assumptions were last recalibrated, we noted that despite significant improvements in several metrics relevant to TFG, there remain some heightened risks in the midterm around, among other things, the so-called maturity cliff between 2012 and 14, and also the possibility of a double-dip recession in either the US or European economies, or indeed both. I noted in Q2's results announcement, and we've seen also in Q3, that there's been general progress on reducing the maturity cliff issue, which is very encouraging. There also appears to be indications of a steady, albeit lackluster at this stage, economic recovery. We can also observe a diminished perceived risk of a double-dip recession. Nevertheless, given, among other things, the mixed economic and corporate results year-to-date and the continuing uncertain outlook, we've made no change to TFG's forward assumptions at the end of the quarter. We continue to review and adjust as appropriate these assumptions, and there is the potential that if the observable improvements continue through Q4, those assumptions may be adjusted. The second step in our fair value methodology is to apply an appropriate discount rate to the projected cash flows. In the past few quarters, the effective discount rate applied to the portfolio has been broadly in the 28 to 30% range, which has represented a significant spread over the prevailing BB-rated CLO tranche yields. Over the course of Q3, we observed a couple of important developments for TFG. Firstly, there was evidence of a significant decline in the risk premium demanded by market participants across the entire spectrum of CLO tranches, including the BB-rated ones. There was also indicative evidence of trading levels in certain CLO equity paper, albeit paper that isn't owned by TFG, which lent support to the notion of a reduction in risk premium or an increase in the value of that type of paper. Secondly, improvements in credit quality and structural strength of many of our own CLO portfolio result in the generation of sufficient OC cushion to protect and potentially reduce the variability, or in other words, the riskiness, of the projected cash flows from our investments. So to reflect those developments, the discount rates have been modified. For the stronger portion of the portfolio, we've reduced the discount rate applied to projected cash flows to 23%. This represents a 5% reduction to the lower end of our previous discount range, but it's still a significant spread over observable yields on BB-rated tranches, and it's at a similar level to that which we've seen at the end of Q1 and Q2 2010. For the remainder of the deals, where there remains potential for heightened variability of future cash flows, the effective discount rate remained at the higher end of the previous range, i.e. 30%. These adjustments to the discount rates resulted in a reduction in the ALR fair value adjustment and result in an increase in fair value of around $43 million, which fed through to a related increase in investment income. So to put this in context, this represents around 26% of the investment income for the quarter. As of the end of the quarter, the ALR fair value adjustment stood at $274.7 million. The appropriateness of these rates will obviously continue to be assessed in the upcoming periods, and if the observable and perceived reduction in rate premium continues, we would expect that to have an impact of reducing the ALR going forward. Again, let's see. A further part, and an important one within our valuation process, is to cross-check the resulting values against observable market prices where they're available. It's worth stressing that the values of our own deals themselves cover a broad span, which reflects the varying individual performance of the deals. Also, that market data for our own paper is at best patchy. Therefore, it continues to be inappropriate to consider using that sparse information to value our portfolio. That being said, we can note that our average carrying cost across the US CLOs, which makes up the vast majority of our portfolio, was approximately 61 cents at the end of Q3, which is up from around 54 cents at the end of Q2. As Jeff's going to cover in a little bit more detail later in the call, We believe that TFG's US CLO average is probably a little lower than the indicative averages reported by certain external sources, but this may be partially explained, at least by TFG's assumption set. Turning now away from valuation to other aspects of the operating performance of TFG, our operating expenses, including performance fees and taxes on LTM's results, were $45.5 million, which represents around 27% of total income and gains. This is a fraction down on Q2, when the costs represented 29% of total income and gains. Cash generated by the portfolio continued to improve, and this reflected, amongst other things, strong underlying portfolio performance in the quarter, which David will cover in more detail later. And as I mentioned before, total cash receipts from the CLO portfolio were around $72 million, and this equates to 59 cents per weighted average share. And this is now getting back to the level, or close to the levels, that we saw in late 2007 and certain quarters in 2008, i.e. a pre-crisis level. Although it's perhaps worth noting, cash receipts will tend not to be even each quarter, but yet there is some variability, and that's to be expected. When we take into account cash received on other investments, and then take off expenses and adjust for net cash settlement of hedges, the net cash generated in the quarter was $55.3 million, which is the highest level for six quarters. I'd like now to comment on the dividend for Q3. As you know, we increased the dividend by 33% to 8 cents per share following Q2's strong performance. And based upon Q3's results, the dividend has been maintained at that higher level. The board feels that this remains an appropriate level when considered in the context of, among other things, sustainable income levels for the company, and plans for stock buyback and the range of investment opportunities open to Tetragon. Finally, from a financial performance perspective, LCM has already proved to be an extremely successful transaction, and that's continued. The purchase price has obviously been repaid, and the business is continuing to contribute to the bottom line at increasing levels. We believe that LCM has excellent operational leverage, and the plan is to continue to seek opportunities to add business into LCM, as well as to utilize further their team's considerable expertise across other aspects of TFG's business. So to summarize this section of the call, we're extremely pleased with Q3's financial results. They reflect strong earnings from strengthening deals and continued growth in cash generation from the portfolio and from LCM, and all this against the backdrop of improving market fundamentals for our product. With that, I'll pass back to David to comment on Tetragon's portfolio and risk profile.
Thanks, Phil. I'd like to now quickly run you through a few portfolio and performance metrics. As at the end of Q3, our CLO investment portfolio remained stable with 68 CLO investments, managed by 31 external collateral managers, representing an estimated fair value of approximately $820 million, up from approximately $720 million as of the end of the prior quarter. Additionally, TFG held approximately $73 million in liquid U.S. bank loan portfolio, comprised of various issuers representing approximately $78 million in par amount. This loan portfolio continued to perform well during the quarter, benefiting from early prepays, amend and extend spread increases, as well as overall loan price improvements. No defaults or downgrades were experienced in the portfolio. Since inception, this direct loan portfolio has generated approximately $1.3 million in trading gains and interest proceeds. We expect to continue to selectively deploy capital into direct loans when appropriate. With respect to the CLO and loan portfolio composition, approximately 75% of risk capital is invested in U.S. broadly syndicated loans, 8.3% in European loans, and 17% in U.S. middle market loans. On a look-through basis, Tetragon's exposure to senior secured leveraged loans totals over $17.5 billion par value, spread across approximately 1,650 different corporate obligors, the substantial majority of which are U.S. names, with the balance being European. We continue to hedge our Euro FX principal risk and presently have no direct credit hedges within the portfolio. I'd like to now update you on some key performance metrics that we remain focused on. CFG's lagging 12-month corporate loan default rate fell to approximately 2.2%, outperforming the 3.6% 12-month lagging institutional U.S. loan default rate as reported by S&P. As at the end of Q3, approximately 96% of our CLO investments were passing their most junior OC tests when evaluated on a percentage of fair value. This is up from approximately 95% at the end of Q2. When measured on a percentage of transactions basis, 56 deals, or 88% of the company's CLO investments by number of transactions, were passing their most junior OC test. Again, an increase from approximately 84% at the end of Q2 2010. Or said another way, an additional two deals began passing their most junior OC test during Q3. TFG's U.S. CLOs, representing approximately 91% of the overall fair value through Q3, performed very well, with 99.7% by fair value and 98% by number passing their most junior OC test. In comparison, the Q3 market-wide average for U.S. CLOs, estimated to be passing their most junior OC test, was approximately 89.5%. At the end of Q3, the weighted average percentage of corporate obligors rated CCC or below fell to 9.6% from 10.5% at the end of Q2. In comparison, the Q3 market-wide median CCC asset holdings of U.S. CLOs were estimated to be 9.9%. Also of note is Tetragon's weighted average rating factor, now standing at 2,658 versus 2,706 at the end of Q3. Let me also say a few words about CLO corporate actions. As you know, taking majority or significant positions in our CLO investments is an important part of our investment strategy. And this strategy, we believe, has again proven to be valuable in the recent quarter. Shortly after the end of Q3 2010, we were able to effectuate a management change in one of TFG's U.S. CLO investments by voting, along with certain debt investors in the transaction, to remove the collateral manager of the CLO and replace it with our internally managed LCM. We believe that this management change will have a positive effect on the performance of the transaction and will therefore enhance the value of our investment. We currently estimate that the cumulative additional gross fee income for LCM earned over the expected life of the CLO may exceed $6 million. We believe that the assumption of third-party originated CLO management contracts by LCM can serve as an important value creator for TFG, especially as TFG seeks to capitalize on economies of scale within its asset management platform. We expect to continue to explore ways to leverage our ownership positions for the benefit of TFG shareholders. With that, I'll turn it back to Phil to go through the Q&A section along with Jeff.
Thanks, David. I'd like to start the Q&A section by giving some feedback on an issue raised by at least a couple of investors, and this relates to how the share buyback works mechanically, and in particular, how it impacts on incentive fees. You'll recall that we initiated the share buyback after consultation with shareholders, and we believe it may provide liquidity to you as investors, and also an efficient means to return cash to TFG shareholders. As the shares continue to trade at a discount to NAV, it's clearly accretive on a NAV per share basis because, if, as an example, we use September month-end numbers, the company would be paying around $5 for $8.43 of asset value, so clearly accretive. So what happens to those shares that are bought back? The repurchase shares are not actually cancelled, but they're not eligible to receive a dividend, and they don't count in the calculation of shares outstanding, nor do they count in the calculation of the NAV per share. So the next question is, how do they affect the incentive fees? Well, the incentive fee is calculated on movements in NAV, and the calculation adjusts for capital items, which include things such as buybacks or indeed dividends that happen during the quarterly period. And therefore, just to reassure people, there is no incentive fee directly attributable to the NAV per share accretion which results from the share buyback process. Hopefully that answers the question, and I'll pass to Jeff to pick up on other matters.
Thanks, Phil. I'll carry on with some of the other questions that we've received. We did receive some questions regarding the new issue CLO market. Specifically, is this market open for business? And if so, how would TFG take advantage of its reopening? There are indeed indications that a new issue CLO market is emerging. In fact, several banks are building deal pipelines that reflect, for the first time, a list of syndicated arbitrage cash flow CLOs that are different from recent past CLOs that were primarily done for reasons other than investor demand, such as refinancing trades with managers holding 100% of the equity tranche, or dealers or managers restructuring a mark-to-market warehouse or other similar type of fund. We now believe that the rating agencies, asset managers, and equity and debt investors have combined efforts to reach an acceptable structure that may allow more parties to participate in the bank loan space via CLOs. We have mentioned in the past that we feel strongly that LCM's strong track record may enable them to be one of the first to take advantage of raising capital through a resurgence in the CLO activity. In fact, we are actively exploring a syndicated cash flow arbitrage CLO, which may be one of the first since the market came to a virtual halt in 2008. Unfortunately, due to applicable requirements, we are unable to disclose any further details of such a transaction at this time, but we hope to do so when and if appropriate. Generally speaking, new issue CLOs may offer what we believe are attractive current returns with very interesting risk-return profiles. The emerging new issue CLO market generally incorporates a structure that has less leverage and more discounted assets than in past transactions. This may result in a projected yield to maturity that is similar to past yields on a spread to LIBOR and held to maturity basis, but with more downside protection resulting from the lower amount of leverage and potential greater upside in a yield to call scenario resulting from the higher level of discounted assets. We are hopeful that a number of these new issue transactions will close prior to year-end and that the visible pipeline will continue to build. We also received some questions related to the price rally observed in the secondary CLO equity market. Specifically, investors are wondering if we are seeing similar asset price appreciation in TFG's portfolio of CLO equity. As you know, we use a mark-to-model methodology to value our assets. We do, however, monitor and participate in the secondary market and are generally aware of trades in CLO equity tranches that we own or that look similarly structured to our deals. While it's very difficult to generalize about the secondary market since all CLO deals are structured differently, we believe that the improved default environment and other influences have led to a pickup in secondary trading activity in CLO equity. In terms of pricing, while again it's difficult to generalize, We have often observed that the dealer community's bid for performing CLO equity was at the bottom of the market in 2009, calculated by 1 to 2 quarters of projected cash flows, resulting in a price of CLO equity of 10 to 20 cents on the dollar. And now that calculation appears to be more in line with 3 to 4 years of projected cash flows, which, given a 20 to 30% current annualized coupon observed in many performing deals today, may result in a dollar price range on secondary CLO equity of approximately 65 to 85 cents on the dollar. Another way to explain this increase in value is to review the trend in CLO over collateralization tests. We feel that OC cushions and prices are correlated. Our CLO equity portfolio has, on average, a vintage of 2006. Generic CLO deals of the same similar vintages and underwritten to a mid-teens IRR typically had OC tests that began at the beginning of the deal of approximately 3.5 to 4%. Using the original loss projections, generally deals of these vintages, considered to be performing according to original risk assumptions, would now have approximately a 1.5% OC cushion. In fact, most performing CLO deals today of these vintages have OC tests that are in excess of 1.5%. The average OC test cushion across our CLOs exceeds 1.5%, with the majority of our deals having more than 50% more OC cushion than was originally expected at this point in the deal's life on a weighted average basis based on our most recent trustee reports. We feel that this improved OC cushions can have a positive impact on CLO equity prices. We are also encouraged by the increase in demand, as we believe that it reflects a growing willingness for investors to embrace the senior secured bank loan market and potentially broaden the demand for both secondary and new issue CLO equity. We also received a couple of questions in regards to the senior secured bank loan market in terms of performance and market expectations. Clearly, we are in a different environment than a year ago. S&P reports that the trailing 12-month default rate for senior secured bank loans hit a 23-month low at the end of October at 2.3%, measured by principal amount. In fact, S&P reports that October was only the second month since December of 2007 that there were no reported loan defaults. S&P attributes this improving default trend to three supporting factors. First, better technicals, as measured by $127 billion of loan market extensions and bond takeouts that have helped leveraged loan issuers delever their balance sheets. Second, improving fundamentals, as aggressive cost-cutting activity has improved cash flow growth, which among the S&P and LSTA index issuers is up between 9.5% and 15.4% from the third quarter last year to the second quarter this year. And lastly, the fact that the concentrated level of bankruptcy filings in 2008 and early 2009 is trailing off because, not surprisingly, the weakest companies filed first, leaving behind a stronger universe of issuers. All of these factors have combined to support a 6.8% price gain in the leveraged loan index through the first 9 months of 2010. We are encouraged by this improvement and believe that the positive trend in the senior secured loan market will continue to evolve near term. That brings the Q&A portion of the call to an end. In fact, the call is now over. We'd like to thank everyone for joining. As always, please do not hesitate to contact us directly with any questions, and we look forward to speaking with you in the future.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes today's conference, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.